me what I must know. Pretty baby, or otherwise I must go. Pretty baby.
This is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. This holiday season, the Farmers Alley Theater will present Forever Plaid, the beloved off-Broadway musical written by Stuart Ross in New York in 1990. It's a review filled with songs of the close harmony guy groups of the 1950s, featuring hits like Three Coins in a Fountain, Lady of Spain, and Love is a Many Splendored Thing. Forever Plaid opens at Farmers Alley Theater on Friday. My guests are director Larry Raven. Hello.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
And we have actors Brian Banville, who plays Sparky.
Hi.
And Ian Subsara, who plays Jinx.
Hello.
Hello. So nice to have you here today. Larry Raven, as director, this is a very personally meaningful show to you. Let me tell listeners myself that you were the originator of the character Sparky in the original production in the off-Broadway show.
Yes, I was a young actor in New York, and I had done a production where I got my equity card of a musical version of The Velveteen Rabbit that was directed by a young director then, Stuart Ross. And he called me about 6 months later and said, I have this idea for this show about this four-part guys group, and we're getting a group of actors together to workshop some ideas, and I would like you to come be involved with it. So he told me some of the song titles, none of which meant anything to me, and I called my parents and I said, hey, I'm going to be working on this thing with these really obscure songs from the 50s and 60s. And I told them a few titles, you know, like Moments to Remember and No, Not Much and Cry. And they said, yeah, no, those were all pop songs.
And they're very good.
Really good songs, yeah. So I got a little education there. But yeah, I was really lucky. It's that call that every young actor hopes that they get when you have an opportunity to help develop something and then it turns into an international super hit. So,
now, how long had you been working as an actor in New York City at the time?
I had moved there halfway through college, so I moved there when I was 20, and I got the call to work on this when I was 24. So I had finished my education there and had, you know, been doing summer stock and auditions and things. And
paying your dues.
Paying my dues. And then this hit. And it was a six-month workshop process where we put up a version of the show that kept developing over just a couple of nights a week. We donated all of the money to a new organization, then Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. We got a lot of the Broadway community to come in and look, and it's developed a word of mouth. And then Gene Walsk came in one evening and wrote a single check, and we suddenly were an off-Broadway show.
I didn't realize that it had that history.
Yeah.
So there are many, many shows that go on Broadway, off-Broadway, that we hear from and never see again. How did this one just capture audiences? Why is it such an enduring hit since it was debuted in around 1990?
It did, yeah. We opened 1990. Well, it's the classic story of people with unfulfilled dreams that get one more chance to come back, get another pass at it, and their dreams are fulfilled. So just for your listeners, the history of the story is these were four guys who met in high school. They were singing songs like the Four Aces, the High Lows, the Four Lads, all of that great four-part stuff. But they had never been a hit with it, and they were still trying to do this kind of music in 1964 when the Beatles and the whole British invasion was happening and music was changing. So mercifully, they were killed on the way to their first big concert, because these guys, their act was never going to fly. Music had taken a different turn at that point. And so when the show starts, the spirits of the four guys have been wandering the cosmos. And through some wrinkle in space and time, these guys are dropped down into 2015 and get a chance to perform their act that they had been rehearsing and never had a chance to do. And the thing that's great is that it's retro hip. So for these guys, they sound better than they ever did. They have production values that they never dreamed about having. They have a live audience there. They get to debut their act. And then there's a little surprise ending in the story. But really, they find that they're really good and that today's audiences just love the innocence. They love the sweetness and the comedy, you know, the fish out of water thing.
There's a lot you can play with, you know, by taking these callow youths to 2015 or just to any sort of present day and having them face what's going on.
Yes, absolutely.
This theater, Farmers Alley Theater, by the way, you can find all the details at farmersalleytheater.com, is an intimate venue. And this will be a cabaret setting. So along with your tickets, you get coffee and dessert. And
they do have a full bar?
Yes, yeah. Right out front. So how does it differ from the space that you were working in to begin with? Was this meant to be?
That's actually how it started in New York. We were in an off-Broadway theater called Steve McGraw's. It was 135 seats. It was table seating, and people had food and drinks, and there was a little tiny balcony with regular seats. But what was interesting, so I think it's a perfect setting for the show. And we have a really wonderful scenic design in this space. You're really going to feel part of it. What was interesting, people thought the show would never, ever grow beyond that. And, you know, I performed it in 2,500-seat theaters and did a full run on the West End in London. And the show translates kind of to any size venue because it's performed concert style. So it can be in an intimate lounge, it can be in a big old super stadium, and it still works in its own sort of way.
Oh, wow, you are just the perfect person to direct this.
I have a little history with
it. Yeah, but you know how to scale it as well. And
yeah, I love for this production, we're really taking it back to its roots, and it's very exciting for me to see it like that.
Well, I want to continue and bring Brian and Ian into the conversation, but why don't we take a quick musical break? Would you set up the song we hear next?
Yes, this is the guy's opening number. It's Three Coins in a Fountain.
In the fountain, each one seeking happiness, thrown by three hopeful lovers. One heart will wear a valentine. Make it mine, make it
Forever Plaid. That's the show that's at Farmers Alley Theater beginning December 4th and continuing through the 27th. Details at farmersalleytheater.com. And at this time, I would like to welcome Brian Banville, who plays Sparky. Hello.
Hi.
And Ian Subsara, who plays Jinx.
Hello.
Hello. And welcome to WMUK and in some cases to Kalamazoo. I know it sounds like, Ian, your first trip to the Midwest is for this show.
Well, I've been in the Midwest before, but never in Michigan. I performed in Wisconsin for a little bit, okay. And also in Kansas City.
And your home base is
I'm from Buffalo originally, but I live in New York City now.
Okay. How long have you been there?
In New York since 2008, which is when I graduated from college.
This was your dream.
Yes.
So in New York, you've been auditioning, playing roles. And how did you get this role?
Well, actually, I was doing a show in Pennsylvania, and I've done Forever Plaid twice before. And I've also done the Christmas version, Plaid Tidings. And I had submitted videos to Farmers Alley Theater in the past for a couple of their shows. And, you know, Jeremy was the artistic director, was just saying, you know, we really love you, but, like, you know, we were going to cast a local for this, or we don't have an equity contract right now for this show. And so I saw that they were doing Forever Plaid this season, and I...
You weren't taking no for an answer.
Yeah, I was like, I'm definitely going to work here one day. and so I just saw they were doing Forever Plaid, and I was like, okay, maybe this is my chance. So I emailed him my video. I emailed him a very, like, professional email, thinking he wouldn't remember who I was. And he was like, oh, hello, Ian. Nice to hear from you. And he was like, you know, I've seen these videos before. You're a great Jinx, and maybe this is the perfect time to get you out here. And he sent my video to Larry, and it just worked out.
So there are four plaids.
Correct.
Who's kind of the... Is there a lead plaid? Would that be Sparky?
I wouldn't say there's a lead plaid, but the leader, I would say, is Frankie.
Frankie.
Yeah.
Neither of you are Frankie.
No.
Okay. So you'll have to just fill me in. Brian, you play Sparky.
Yes.
Who, as we were talking during the music, was originally supposed to survive the crash or not.
Yes. Sparky's kind of the cut-up or the ham of the group. He loves performing and sometimes gets a little carried away in his performing. And so that helps to bring some of the comedy to his role. And Jinx, who Ian plays, and Sparky are actually stepbrothers. And so there's that added kind of family dynamic there. And Frankie just has his personality is... allows him to be more of that leader of the group.
Keep the clear head for the most part.
Yes, yeah. And I've played Frankie before, and so he keeps the show going. He makes sure his main responsibility is to take care of the audience. And so that's what he does for the majority of the show. So even if stuff is happening on stage that maybe shouldn't be happening, he's focused on making sure that the show moves forward and that the audience feels okay about it. And then the last plaid is Smudge, and he plays our bass. And Smudge is a very fun character. He's kind of a no-nonsense character, gets really, really anxious and nervous, but is really meticulous about his craft and his performance. And so you get to see a great transformation with Smudge as well as the show progresses.
The four of you sing tenor one, tenor two, baritone, and bass. Which character is which?
Sure. So the two lower parts are Smudge is the bass and Sparky is the baritone.
And I, Jinx is tenor one, which is the character I play, and then Frankie is tenor two.
Okay. Does that play at all into the characterness of your parts?
I think yes. So, a little bit, yes. Jinx is very shy and in the beginning, and he, I don't know, I've always thought the fact that he's the one, well, it says in the liner, like in the script, that the only reason Jinx is in the group is because of his high notes, you know? Like, Sparky was probably just like, well, you know, my stepbrother sings high, so put him in the group.
Okay, now coming together as an ensemble, how long have you, about what time did you get together here in Kalamazoo to start rehearsing?
It's been an interesting process and a very atypical process here, just with scheduling. But together, we've probably been together for maybe...
A week now,
mm-hmm. 6 or 7 days of full rehearsals. And then a few of us kind of came a week earlier based on schedules and contracts and stuff. So we actually worked with two of the other guys who, one of which who had never done the show before. So we brought him in a little bit earlier.
I'd like to ask Larry at this time about, you know, bringing this cast together and how that worked for you.
Sure. Well, this was an unusual casting process for me because I did it all remotely. So Farmers Alley Theater did their initial sets of auditions here. Jeremy Koch, the artistic director, who's also a wonderful Broadway actor and certainly knows his stuff, and Marie, our musical director, who has worked on the show many times, they sent me who they thought would be great to move on to the next level callbacks, and they sent me videos of all of those people. And then I asked for more things from some of them, and then they got them all together and sang them in groups. And yeah, that's how we ended up with one from New York and two from an hour north and one from San Diego. But it's really the right fit. They have a beautiful sound together.
That might have been one of the most important things for you.
Yeah.
Just knowing that they have to become one when they sing.
They really do. And it's such a unique show because, you know, everybody loves an underdog. And that's partly what brings so much comedy to the show, but also so much heart to the show, is these are four lovable losers who really get to shine throughout the course of the show. And what it does to you as an actor in the piece, it has a brotherhood about it. I know so many guys that have been plaids that 15 years later are still getting together and singing with the guys they first did the show with, certainly in contact, because everyone has to be an excellent singer, but it's really difficult part singing. And so from moment to moment, you only sound as good as everyone else who is holding you up and holding you together in this piece. And then on top of that, you have to have four great actors and four really smart comedians, because there are a lot of ways to get laughs in the show. But I always say, you know, there are 1,000 ways to get a laugh in that moment. And there are about 4 smart choices. You know, and we want to find one of the 4 smart ones, or maybe find a 5th. But it's not going for the obvious gag. It's really finding the humor that's out of this situation. These guys are trying their honest best to put on a genius show, and they're just about 50 years too late to the party.
It would be kind of hard to show you a new way of playing any of these parts. I mean, I know they're new people.
Yeah.
But you've seen the roles inhabited so many ways over the years.
That's true. What I find exciting is I teach them the original choreography. I know all of the stories for how and why things are the way they are. And then I think it's really important that each character in the piece has their own physical vocabulary. Sparky needs to move like Sparky. He is the cut-up. He's a little cocky. He takes it a little too far. Jinx is shy, so his movement isn't as committed to, but it has its own sense of comedy. And then what is exciting for me is working with 4 actors I've never worked with before and finding what makes them special, what lights them up. How does Ian's Jinx become completely individual to him? And then that informs what that brotherhood is with these 4 guys.
I'm speaking with director of Forever Plaid, Larry Rabin, who originated the role of Sparky in the original off-Broadway production. As well, I'm speaking with Brian Banville, who plays Sparky in this production, and Ian Subserra, who plays Jinx. And the show opens Friday, December 4th at Farmer's Alley Theater. Tickets and more information are available at 343-2727 or farmersalleytheater.com. Let's hear another song.
Great, let's go to the next track. This is Gotta Be This or That and Undecided.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Tell me what I must know, pretty baby, or otherwise I must go. Pretty baby, it's yes or no. Gotta be this or that. If you ain't wrong, you're right. If it ain't dark, it's light. If you ain't sure, you're slow and indecisive. You got a heart, and if you're kind, then don't keep us apart. Make up your mind, you're indecisive now. So what are you gonna do? You say it's yes and then it's no. You say, and then you go. You're undecided now. So what are you gonna do? Do I, yes, no, stay, go, hem, ha, do I?
If you just tuned in, that's from Forever Plaid, and it takes the stage at Farmer's Alley Theater on December 4th, Friday, and will continue all the way through December 27th for performances Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and maybe Sundays, guys. Yeah. Yep, they're nodding. All right, that's a lot of work to take on. During the music, we started chatting about how you got into musicals and acting and singing. Ian, you grew up being cast as a young person.
Yeah, I've been doing theater ever since I was really little. I grew up in Buffalo, and in middle school, during like home and careers class, they'd always ask, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I'd always be like, an actor. And they'd be like, okay, but what else? And I was like, no, I really want to be an actor. And I started looking at music theater programs and colleges when I was a freshman, and everyone was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I know that this is what I want to do. So I ended up going to school for music theater. And yeah,
one of the things I think people mistake about actors and acting is that the process of becoming an actor can be self-involving, but the process of being part of a company is the opposite. You really need to listen and give and take.
Yeah.
Did you have an experience that put you through that sort of
process? I was always told, you know, by my teachers and my professors that it's like sports. Like, you are a team. You're working together. I mean, you know, and they always say, you know, like, there's no small parts. No, wait, there's a, no, what is it?
No, they're all big parts.
There are no, yeah. But yeah, it's always working together, and you know, I never think like, oh, this is all about me. And, you know, I always, and acting is like about, you know, reacting off the people in the show with you to give you life, you know?
I see down at the Kalamazoo Civic, people who were cast in roles on last month are pulling ropes on the next production. You know, there's a putting on a show is something we all get pleasure from, and no matter what role you play, I think that's what you were getting at there.
Yeah, definitely. And I've even done stuff in college where we were required to do backstage work, so I've done stuff backstage. I've run Spotlight, you know. Yeah. I've done it all. So
Brian, do you have a similar story, something different?
My story is very different. I grew up not really performing. I was more of a sports guy. Went to college to have a career in medicine, and then veered off into a career in education. And I've only been performing now for about 4 years, and have found a new passion for performing, and I've been really lucky the past 2 years to be able to get to do both, be an educator and perform as well. And performing has spoken to me very differently, kind of similar to what Ian was saying. This is going to sound really cheesy to a lot of viewers, but you really do create a very close-knit family. And the theater community, especially where I'm from in San Diego, is very tight. Knit, and you can find a lot of support there. And I have found that at any theater that I've worked at, there's a tight-knit support group there that you can go to, not only to fulfill your passion and sing and perform, but also to really kind of get that homey feeling, especially with Ian and I being away from home for the holidays. That's going to be pretty critical this year. So I'm excited that I'm now pursuing a career in performing, and it's been fantastic.
Well, was that hard? I mean, you... I think for Ian, you know, I just wanted to act. But you had almost a crisis, right?
Yeah, it was... I grew up in a family that, you know, the usual of you can do anything that you want to do. And I think that I figured out a way to be able to do a little bit of both. And I'm still trying to navigate that now because performing is calling louder as opposed to education at this point. But I'm still finding a way to kind of do both. And not that the listeners need to have this message put across, but it's really one of those things that as long as you know, if you put the effort in, that you can really try to do everything that you want to do. You know, I was always that person who wanted to be a doctor and then wanted to be a lawyer and then wanted to be a veterinarian and then wanted to be this and wanted to do all of them. And, you know, as we evolve, as we get older, you really can kind of meet all those different new things, and always trying new things. I know a lot of people that have shifted careers 10, 15 times, and every career shift has been... put a bigger smile on their face. And so that's just how some of us are wired.
Larry, can I get some of your thoughts on this this idea, the strength of the theater community as a family?
It's absolutely critical. It really saved my life. I went to 3 high schools in 3 states, and my parents had the good taste to move twice during the school year. And
thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah. But truly, I remember I got moved partway through my junior year in high school, and I walked into school and it was picture day that day, and I was not having it. You know, it was like one state too many. And I had decided that I wasn't going to make any connections to anybody because I just was tired of it. And I remember the vice principal introduced me to a kid who was walking down the hall and said, Craig Meyer, who's still a great friend of mine. He said, Meyer, this is Larry Rabin. You guys are taking the thespian picture right now, aren't you? We went, yeah. He said, he's an actor. Take him down there. So, you know, I walked in, instant family. If you're a thespian in one state, you're a thespian in another. And I took the class picture, and now I look back at that picture. I'm still in touch with about half of those people. And it also was great training ground to for the rest of my life, because you don't know on Thursday what state you're going to be working in possibly the next week. You're always looking for your next job, or sometimes what continent you're going to be on. I auditioned in Los Angeles, got a job on Broadway. I upended my house between Friday and Monday to be there for Monday rehearsal. I was still living in New York, you know, 2 years later. It just is ever shifting. And it's great. So yes, theater people are the best. We take care of our own.
Do you have any packing tips for those of us who have to travel on short notice?
Yeah, take way less than you think you need. You always end up with too much stuff, and there are stores every place.
There you go. Well, I'm talking to director Larry Raven and actors Brian Banville and Ian Subserra about Forever Plaid, which opens on Friday. Can we get back to some music?
Yes, we can. We're going to play Johnny Ray's Cry. This is Jinx's breakout moment.
If your sweetheart sends a letter of goodbye, it's no secret, you'll feel better if you cry.
Sky, so let your hair down and go on.
From Forever Plaid, we heard Cry, and that is a featured song of the character Jinx. Playing Jinx in the Farmer's Alley Theater production is Ian Subserra. Director Larry Raven has cast Ian and Brian here. So as I think I admitted, maybe not on the air yet, but I don't know the storyline of Forever Plaid. So if you would fill me in on what's happening to Jinx and what's going on.
Sure. So Jinx... all four of these guys have their impediments. Jinx is prone to nosebleeds when he sings too high, and which is always great live in performance, to have a wad of cotton stuffed up your nose and be trying to get the blood stop. But when Jinx approaches this moment, he's just had a nosebleed. It's pure terror. He gets shoved forward. And the lyrics of the song really echo what's going on inside of him, the panic, you know, he really does want to break down and cry. In the course of the number, though, he finds that the energy from the audience and the support of the guys behind them catapult him into this kind of superstar sound that just comes bellowing out of him. And it changes him for the whole rest of the course of the evening. It's like he finally finds his voice in this moment.
Ooh. A star is born.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's so many embarrassing things you have to do in this role, Ian. How do you play comedy? I mean, how do you convince people that you are this character?
I think the most important thing about comedy is just being a real human, you know, and like not taking it, not playing anything for laughs, but just actually being, you know, like being shy or really like believing that you're singing a high note and it causes you to have a nosebleed, and what that would make you feel in front of an entire audience of strangers and guys that I think, well, Jinx admires and wants to be like, he wants to feel included. So I think being honest in the moment is what actually brings out the comedy.
Can you tell from the audience when you are being that real person, do they react more strongly?
Oh, definitely. I think so. And I've seen shows where people, you can tell, like, they're trying to get a laugh. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But I think audiences appreciate it more when you're just being human. And, you know, these guys are real. Like, they really have, like, their own impediments and everything. And when it's done that way, it's so much more endearing and ultimately really funny, too.
Is that related to a certain level of just being comfortable on stage?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And that's like the whole point of rehearsal is to understand, and even this, I've only been here for a week, but I'm already understanding like how I relate to each guy individually, personally, which also helps bringing it on stage as a character too. You know, like how I interact with this person. And yeah, I definitely think so.
There's something about the music in this musical that sounds simple and easy. Maybe it's because it's so tuneful. We know the songs, many of the melodies are just like you can hum them. So how hard can it be?
Wow.
It's very difficult.
When you're doing a show like this where it's four guys and we're in very tight harmonies, and sometimes for the people who are listening who are music lovers, sometimes I'm singing the seventh, sometimes I'm singing the dreaded sixth of the chord, and those come out of nowhere. So especially Sparky's part, the baritone track, and Frankie's has us a lot too. We tend to shift where we are, so sometimes even though Frankie's singing tenor two and I'm singing baritone, I'll be singing higher than he is, and then that'll be for two bars, and then we'll magically switch back. Or sometimes
or
I'll
not.
Be higher than Jinx, and sometimes I'll be the bass, and sometimes the lines are very beep boop boop beep bop, or at least that's what it feels like when you first learn it. But then once you bring all four of us together, that chord clicks. Man, it's the music's so great.
Do you have an appreciation for the genre, the groups that created the sound in the 40s, 50s?
Yeah, I mean, I used to sing in a barbershop quartet, and so I loved this kind of stuff, and did a cappella all through college, and I love those tight chords and those tight harmonies, and it makes you go back and want to listen to stuff like Shaboom by the Chords, and all these other great Shake, Rattle, and Roll, and a lot of those sounds of the 50s, and to hear that kind of difference of chord. They talk a lot about through the generations, there's a lot of typically in the 50s you had four parts, and then sometimes in the 60s you have five, so you'll add kind of a fifth harmony, and some of the time periods had very specific kind of harmonies that came with it. So
wow, you can really go down the rabbit hole on
you can
four and five part harmony.
You can.
Larry, is your ear for this attuned enough that you can turn something that's good into something great or spot on?
Yeah, absolutely. The guys are smiling, looking at me. I know this music really well. And what's fascinating about it is just changing a slight color in a vocal, in a vowel sound can make the difference between the chord being bright and in tune and being slightly out of tune, even if people aren't singing flat. So it's about getting a style for all four of these people together, finding a way to give them the tools they can absolutely tune it, and then on top of that, acting it and really making it fly. I was lucky to work with James Raitt, who did all of the original musical arrangements on this. And he was really specific about the sound that he wanted. He was really just a musical genius. So the charts they're more difficult than the original, which makes it more satisfying for the audience. These guys sing these songs better than a lot of the original guys, because a lot of the original guys were high school guys singing this stuff in garages. And it's exciting, but what James was really adamant about was you can't lose the raw quality that those original groups had, because there's something so thrilling about that. If you get it too clean, then it turns into elevator music. And this was never elevator music, you know? This was really the sound of a time period. People fell in love to this music.
This really
People
was
the... partied to this
yeah.
music. This was the era.
They were feeling that teen love, literally.
Yeah, right. And he also said that the other danger is that people treat it like it's musical theater music, and it's not that either. These songs, when they start, they should sound like you've put a 45 on. The thing that is, we have a dramatic context or a comedic context in which it sits, and so then it takes on a whole other multi-layered life.
This is called a musical review, so I presume there's a lot of music. What's about the proportion of talking to music?
Oh, it's It's three quarters music, about a quarter book. And when it first starts, the dialogue feels a little more like it's just connective tissue in between songs. But what you realize is that Stuart Ross wrote a very smart, very lean book, and that you get more and more information about these people and their lives and their dreams, their needs, their desires, their wants, their foibles as it goes on. So people really feel like they know these guys. And I can't tell you, you know, I did 1,500 performances of the show. People write letters all the time. I mean, telling their full life story, because something about this show and these people and their dream fulfillment, it really touches them.
And they just want to tell you.
They just want to tell you, yeah. And it's the only show where I know theaters leave their box office open after the performance because people say, I have to bring my aunt and uncle, and I'm buying tickets for my neighbor. And people want to bring people back and share it with them. So
that just gives us a small example of why Forever Plaid became the classic it is. Yeah. You know, and we started the hour saying, well, how does this happen? But I think you've given us some clues as to what went into it and the effect it can have. It's at Farmer's Alley Theater, December 4th through the 27th. Shows are Thursday through Sunday. There's 2 o'clock matinees. And you can find out more at farmersalleytheater.com or 343-2727. I'm sure Rob Weiner and Jeremy Koch are, you know, still open to adding more performances if they hear from a lot of people.
Yeah, so it's selling really well, but yeah, they're fully prepared and would love to add more performances.
Yeah.
And we're doing a little holiday treat as an encore, so it'll give you a little holiday bang for your buck.
Well, Larry, isn't your job done once the show opens? I mean,
oh yeah, a director the morning after opening is like last night's fish. You know? No, people love you, but literally they don't pay for your hotel room. They put you on a plane and the director goes away, and if you've trained your people correctly, they will maintain what it is that you've said. What I really love to do is to leave the show in the actor's hands for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks and then come check back in with it and just see the wonderful nuances that have been added to the show, you know. But my job is to make sure that they have the taste, that they'll make the right choices so that it doesn't become a show that wasn't the show that I left them with.
But, I mean, it's all... What about your victory laps? You know, I mean, that's not, doesn't seem right to just work, show opens, and you go on to the next thing. I would want to just run around the theater saying, hey, look at what I did.
Yeah, no, it's, the impulse is there that you'd love to stay and enjoy it. But, and then it's on to the next thing, and it's just the practicality of the business.
Do you have something on your plate already?
I do. I'm directing the new Broadway revival of Cinderella, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, on Long Island. And I start that right after this opens. So we're the first regional theater. It's still out on tour, but because it's closed on Broadway now, they were the first theater to get the rights for it. So I'm very excited about that.
May I ask how much of your career now is directing as opposed to starring?
It's in the last 2 years, it's morphed. So up until 2 years ago, I was 75% an actor and 25% a director. And now it's completely flip-flopped.
How do you like
that? I'm
having
a hard time finding time to get on stage because the directing things are coming fast and furious. So I love them both.
You were able to make the transition. I mean, why? I mean, not why exactly, just you have a big set of skills.
Well, thank you. I think for all of us, for the most part, contrary to popular opinion, actors are hyper bright people, highly achieving. You know, it's a lifelong, we're lifelong students because you're always learning from the people that you're in, the people that you're with, always making you better. And we look at the script, we dissect it, we pull it apart. And so you start to develop a director's sensibility within yourself as a young actor. It's wonderful then when you get the opportunity. And one of my favorite things, it's terrifying, but it's so fun when I get somebody hands me their brand new musical that they've worked on for 10 years, and I get to decide exactly what it looks like, what the tone is, what the colors on the set are, what, you know, how everything moves and operates and how it holds together. And that's a really exciting creative little journey.
Well, I'm going to have to hear more about that at another time. We don't have a lot of time left today for Forever Plaid, which opens December 4th. But yeah, Larry, I hope you will come back to Farmers Alley Theater.
Thank you. I would love to come back. They're a wonderful family there.
Well, thank you for giving your talents for this. And Ian and Brian, maybe you could tell me if Larry's a good director after all. Did he choose the right?
He's very good.
Is he helpful? In you know, does he know too much?
He doesn't know too much. But he knows just the perfect amount. And it's so awesome to be working on this project with someone who is in the original cast and being taught the original choreography. And we're wearing the original jackets, and it's really awesome.
Yeah, and I've had the pleasure of working with Larry both on stage as a performer and as a director as well. And so, I love Larry, and he's very smart. One of the smarter directors I've worked with. He can really take something that needs some zhuzhing and make something really special out of it. And so it's great to work on Forever Plaid. That's so near and dear to him.
He is asking a lot of you in these roles. You're singing very difficult parts, and you have to be on stage a lot. I mean, I assume that you're all four up there most of the time.
Yeah, the whole time.
The whole time.
Oh, my gosh. So he knows what it's taking out of you and how to take care of you and make sure you'll be prepared for Friday.
Absolutely.
Well, you still have a little ways to go. There's a lot of more perfecting ahead, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yes.
Brian, you mentioned another production you worked with Larry with. What was that?
Larry and I met on a production of Spamalot, which is based on the Monty Python movie, Holy Grail. That's where we met performing. And then he directed me in Catch Me If You Can and La Cage aux Folles.
Mm, wow. Wow. So you've worked together quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Larry, could you tell me a story? You don't have to. I'm just curious. I've been watching a lot of Frasier lately. About David Hyde Pierce. Do you have a David Hyde Pierce? Because Spamalot, I know he was in that.
He sure was. And no, God bless David Hyde Pierce. If he and Matthew Broderick keep doing Broadway shows, I'll continue to have a career. So yeah, he won the Tony Award for doing the lead, Lieutenant Frank Chaffee, in Curtains, and I got to play that in Wichita. And I've done his role in Spamalot now 4 times. He's actually, I did Forever Plaid, the movie, and he's the voice of God. So I feel like we're very connected.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah, and I have family members that say I look like I'm a distant cousin of his on top of it. So.
A kindred spirit.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice to hear. Well, here we are at the top of the hour. Why don't we go out with another selection from the show?
Excellent. This is No Not Much. It's one of my very favorite songs in the show because it's all about the repression of the time period. It's a romantic ballad, but it's when you can't actually say to somebody, I love you, I have feelings for you. So it all has to be said kind of backwards.
Well, that might be how I'm feeling about you all right now. Thank you for coming to WMUK, and have a wonderful show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Forever Plaid begins at Farmers Alley Theater on December 4th and continues through the 27th. Find out more at farmersalleytheater.com. And thanks to Larry Rabin, Brian Banville, and Ian Subserra.
I don't want my arms around you. No, not much. I don't bless the day I